morning and welcome back to the morning show with Michelle. You're listening to 90.7 WGXC Acra. Now, as promised, I did tell you that we would be talking this morning about elder living strategies. And so I'm here with Amanda Henry here in the studio with Amanda, and she is the CEO of Elder Living Strategies here in Hudson, Connecticut. So welcome, Amanda. No, she's shaking
Hudson,
her head at me.
New York.
We're
in New York.
Oh, okay.
So, I work not only in New York, but really wherever I'm needed. One of the amazing things about the computer age is that I can even consult with people overseas and have done so quite a bit. So, but generally, yes, I'm around the Hudson River Valley in Columbia, Greene, and Dutchess counties.
Okay, wow. So it sounds like you're kind of all over the place, which I didn't realize that when we met.
No, you probably thought I looked quite together, not all over the place and scattered at all. But it was a lucky morning, Michelle, when we met. Yes, I really go where I'm needed, and my practice really is not just confined to elders living in rural areas, although that seems to be a lot of it. You know, I don't know if you know, but Columbia and Greene counties are some of the oldest counties in New York, and while there are many services and options available to elders, the social aspect of things is one of the most important, especially for those who might not have a close support system or might live out in the country and in a rural area whose family and friends may have dwindled. So one of the things that I've been doing is putting together social events for elders at my house on a regular basis. So we sort of have tea in the garden, which is rather nice. And my hope is that sort of community action will spread like little ripples, and people will start to offer more neighborly interaction as used to be, so that we go back in some ways to a more community approach to supporting elders in our midst.
So then if I hear you correctly, you're saying so you work to help not just elders, but communities look for, like, strategize around.
Well, I'm hoping that it's going to develop into that. I think you've extrapolated a little further than I had even I'd even expressed. But yes, I mean, I think that that's very important. And as New York, which is one of the last states in the union to implement the Olmsted Act, but as New York starts to do that, I think we're going to see a greater synergy between different community groups, so that social groups can actually come together and build community just in the way that they come together. And I think that big government is looking for ways to encourage communities to find that feeling again in many ways.
So for those who don't know what the Olmsted Act is, can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, very briefly. And gosh, I wish I had the exact year of it, but I'm sure if I quote it, somebody will get back to me and say, oh no, it was 1987. But in any event, what it says, essentially, is that all citizens, regardless of mental ability, mobility, are entitled to an active social life. And one of the things that we've looked at is integrating, for instance, the developmentally disabled within our community. In this area, I know COARC does a marvelous job with that. I worked with the Camp Hill organization that firmly believes in integrating able and disabled people together and for productive communities. So now we're looking at, well, what does that mean, a lack of mobility? That's definitely something for elders to look into. And, of course, transportation is a big one. So we're lagging, frankly, behind the rest of the union in this. So I'm looking for ways to encourage that to happen.
Right. And I think it's really great what you're doing. So I read an article yesterday, and it was about a 93-year-old woman that's still working. She's a park ranger, and, you know, she gets up every day. She goes to work. She loves it. It's, you know, it's not just what she does, but it's who she is. And, you know, when I look at, I know a number of people now who have transitioned into assisted living facilities, right? Some of them are really happy about it because they were living very lonely existences before they got into these facilities. But others are really unhappy. They're really unhappy, and they're frustrated because they feel like their independence has been taken away from them, right? They feel like, I mean, their lives have changed, right? Someone is now telling them not just when they're going to eat, but what they're going to eat. And, you know, like their days are structured by other people. And I've got to imagine that's such a difficult thing, especially if you're 88 or 89 and you've lived, you know, like for 89 years doing whatever you want to do. And now you're forced into a rigid structure of living.
I think a lot of that, and you're absolutely right, but a lot of that has to do with how we choose to approach things. And when people would express those feelings that you've just talked about to me in some degree of frustration, I would respond, I would acknowledge them, and then I would say, yes, but you've been cooking for yourself your whole life. It's about time somebody cooked for you and cared for you in the way that you've cared for yourself and or others and your family, and positioning it from a slightly different perspective. You are now entitled to be waited on hand and foot.
Right.
You've earned that.
And I've tried to help people. I've tried to really help people reframe how they see it, especially the ones who are unhappy. But sometimes I think that there's just such, especially when you look at someone who is a type A personality, a very strong personality. Yes.
I can't imagine. I know that I'm staring it in the face myself. Right. I think the best thing for people to do is to make plans, to make active, fluid, dynamic plans for their elder years that they can revisit and change, but to start young, because they do say it and it's true, it creeps up on you more quickly than you could even possibly imagine. And the people who are doing the best at this point with the fifth transition in their lives are those who've made adequate plans.
Right. And, you know, it's something that even I've started thinking about, you know, because I've, you know, I had a career with the National Park Service. The listeners know I was a law enforcement officer. And, you know, I left that and went back to school and I'm now in ministry. And I've been thinking about, okay, so what does retirement look like in 30 years for me, which is what I'm looking at. But, you know, the reality of it is, you know, we've got to be thinking about this, and not just young people, but older people as well, right? So not just people who are getting closer to that point where they're going to be retired or transitioning into a different type of living situation. And so, but you do some really neat things to help people kind of in their transitioning process. Didn't you have a party? Did you have a party this weekend?
Oh, yes. Yeah, we have a lot of parties. We had a party this weekend, a tea party, at which I invited one of Hudson's more infamous characters, a drag queen by the name of Trixie Starr, who, for those of you in Hudson know, bakes the most amazing cookies among her many talents. Well, she also pitched up to my house with a cello. I had no idea she was a proficient cellist. And she proceeded to arrange her sky blue skirts over a chair on my lawn and take out her cello and play, much to the delight and amusement of guests and passers-by, because we were just there for bingo. We had no idea we'd get a concert as well.
Oh, my. So that must have been quite fabulous.
It was a riot, yes. And then, of course, it clouded over as it happens in the best picnics, and the storm came in. So we ran inside and continued the afternoon in the living room.
But so who's usually invited to these parties? Because I think you said to me, you can come, but...
Ah, yes, there is a caveat. Well, all you have to do is get in touch with me if you know of an elder person who'd like to come to a party, and it's a social event. However, okay, Here's the rule. If you are under 80 and you accompany a person who may need a little more help, your job for the entire time that you're at my party is to take care of somebody who can't and to make sure that they have all the tea and cucumber sandwiches and scones they can manage and anything else that they might need, because I want to make sure that they have a great time. I mean, anybody is welcome. Any age are welcome.
Right.
Sometimes I have children handing out sandwiches and scones to elder people. Sometimes we have family members. Sometimes people come together who haven't seen each other for tens of years and get together at one of these events. So it's a fairly simple process. I'm not hard to get hold of, and people find me and call, and you can't just pitch up. I do need to know how many people are coming, but
right. I think it's
pretty open.
I think it's great that you do this. I also think it's really wonderful that, you know, you say that your caveat is to, you know, that you have to wait on someone if you're under 80, you know. So what you all don't know, and Amanda and I were talking about it as she was coming in, is I have a sprained ankle and a fractured patella right now. And so getting around is a little bit difficult, and I've never really had a challenge getting around. So this is like the first time I've been injured and haven't really just been able to kind of still like run around and do things like I normally do. And
yeah,
so
you're getting a great window into what might be, and
right,
it's a scary thing in many ways.
So I can't imagine, you know, having like decreased mobility and then being somewhere and, you know, the expectation is still, oh, well, you got to get up and get all your own stuff. And well, why aren't you moving faster? And, you know, for all intents and purposes, if I didn't have, you know, like an ankle brace on, you would think I'm going to get my knee brace later today. But you would think that I was fine, you know, like, well, why is she moving so slow? What's going on over there? Like, you're too young to be moving this slow, and you should be moving faster.
I hear what you're saying, and I think something that I see happening, and it's going to be happening a lot more quickly, is that people are a lot more cognizant of elders and elder needs. I mean, it's not just all the publicity, but just to give you an idea, Michelle, in the national census of 2010, which is the last figures we have nationally, there were 40 million Americans aged 60 and above. By 2030, which is a very quick 15 years ahead, that number of 40 million is doubling to
Wow.
a projected 80 million Americans who are 60 and over. Now, the burden that this is going to put on every aspect of society is enormous. And it's not as if we haven't known that the baby boomers are aging and aging
right.
much more healthily than their parents and grandparents did. And longevity is going to be the norm. I see, for instance, a short time ago, 10 years ago, even people were hesitant if they needed a mobility device, a walker, a cane. Now, the big deal is wherever I go, well, who's going to pick up the walker, and let's bring the walker, and maybe we should take a transport chair, and let's build in the needs of the less mobile into everyday living. And I think you're going to see a lot more of that.
Right. I think you're right about that, because I remember when there was a certain stigma attached to having something to assist you, like using a walker or a cane or something. And I recently had someone ask me, like, someone say to me, like, oh, I think I need a walker. I think it'll make me more steady on my feet. Do you know how I can get one? Or if someone's got an extra one that I can use.
Yes.
And I was like, that's huge that here this person is. They recognize the need, one, and they're not ashamed to say, I need this, too.
This is very much a baby boomer trait. For instance, there used to be a stigma to wearing hearing aids and hearing devices. But the boomers who literally grew up having their eardrums burst at rock concerts are much more likely to do that. And as such, audiology has become huge. Again, any business that's related to geriatrics has become so much more prevalent in our society. It's interesting to see that.
No, yeah, that is really interesting. But I think it's great and it's very necessary because, you know, I do work with a number of the people that I work with are part of this population, you know, and so I'm constantly asking the questions, okay, well, how do I make this more accessible? You know, how do we take, so, because, you know, I'm a pastor now. And so, you know, a huge portion of what I do during the week is centered around like Sunday worship. So the question is always, okay, well, how do I maintain the accessibility to this? Right? Not just can you get there, but can you, is what we're doing reaching you? But also, how do we kind of merge? How do we merge what we're doing here with some things that are maybe a little less traditional or, you know, a little bit newer, a little more contemporary? But I've found, surprisingly, the people that have been most open to the change are the seniors.
I don't know why you're surprised. We're baby boomers. We are used to molding society as we go along to suit ourselves. We started in the 50s. And it's continued through every decade.
I guess you're right, but some of these are people who are like in their late
80s. And still pretty funky. I mean,
no, yeah, they
it.
Are. And I think it's fantastic. I think it's great. I mean, sometimes the biggest resistance I've gotten is from the people who are in their 40s or their 50s, you know, that don't really want to see things change. And so I always think it's interesting.
I have a 92-year-old neighbor who introduces herself as an artist and a writer. She's a published author, but she's started writing again, generally on topics around aging in Columbia County. And she is as 92 years old. She just is the most extraordinary person. And she has absolutely no hesitation about saying, gosh, you know, my hearing aids aren't great, but I know that there's a new app on the iPhone, and I could, if I got a different iPhone, then maybe I could take it to the restaurant with me and it would act as a personal speaker. I said, Chloe, how on earth do you know those things? And, oh, well, she said, I read, I'm online. And she absolutely is. She's a lot more together about that stuff, I think, than I am.
Well, you know, I worked for, when I was in graduate school, I worked for Apple. And I was the person in the store who, if a senior, if an elder person came in and needed to set up a device that they had purchased, I was the person that was called over to help them set the device up. They were like, wow, you have amazing patience. My mother might disagree, but I was the one who ended up doing this. And I'll never forget, there was a woman who was 94 who had decided she wanted an iPad for her birthday. And her, I think it might have been her granddaughter and, you know, the son-in-law or grandson-in-law, I guess, at that point, had come in to do this for her, you know, and she was with them. She was in a wheelchair and, you know, got her set up on this iPad and spent more than an hour with her, you know, like teaching her kind of the basics of using it and how to send email and how to FaceTime, because she really wanted to be able to see the great grandkids.
Of course.
And it was just really amazing. And she said, you know, they wanted to buy me a computer about 10 years ago, but I didn't want one. But I think it's time that I got on board now with this. And I was like, what an awesome thing. And here, you know, they were kind of working together as a family to get her kind of up and functioning.
Yes, absolutely. It's a wonderful way to visit Right. You know, my family are 3,000 miles away, so I get to visit with them that way. Fortunately, my mother's quite young, and she's had a computer since the early 90s. My grandfather, her father, advised her. That was the business for her to get into. She never actually took his advice, but she's been very pro computers, and as a result, we all are too. So it's the way that we communicate as a family, and it's fun to teach somebody. I mean, I tell them all the time, they make it for kids to do. You can right. certainly do it. They
right.
make it very easy.
Yeah, I mean, we had a kids area set up in the store. And it was for small children, you know, and I mean, the kids who could just barely walk, you could watch them just, they would see the iPad set up on the table and they would just like take off running for them and they would go on them and could play the games. And, you know, there are a lot of, you know, like apps and things out there for learning as well. But I think it's wonderful that, you know, that people like you are out there, you know, that you're here in the Hudson Valley.
You.
And that you are really working to help elders and their families kind of adapt to a new way of living. And so with that, we're going to take a little bit of a break and going to bring you some music. We've got some, let's see what we've got here. We've got some Danny Gokey with Hope in Front of Me, because you know, this gives me hope. The conversation that we're having right now, it gives me hope. And I know that sometimes as people get older, they'll look at the situation and things around them and feel like it's hopeless. I've talked to more than one person like that. And it doesn't have to be that way.
Absolutely not.
But I think it's important for us to remember, and us meaning collective us, like collective we, remember that we all have a role in making sure that all members of our society feel like they have a part in our society and in our world and in our community. So here is Danny Gokey with Hope in Front of Me. And that was Danny Gokey with Hope in Front of Me. So we're back. I'm here in the studio with Amanda Henry, CEO of Elder Living Strategies. So, and we're back. So now, Amanda, I wanted to ask you, you know, before we took that break just now, we started talking about how we integrate elders into the community. So what are some ways that we can really work to integrate elders into the community?
Oh, I'm glad you asked that. That's
or reintegrate them into the community,
yes,
because they're part of the community
of
already.
Of course. You know, in days gone by, elders lived with us. We lived in small familial groups, and children grew up learning from often their grandparents what the skills they needed to move forward. We really don't have that anymore. And one of the things that I'd love to do is to run some programs for elders and young children, or, you know, younger people in the community. One of the ones I had in mind was make, do, and mend. Nobody knows how to mend clothing anymore, or to sew on a button, or to do a hem. And I thought that was one of the things that elders might choose to pass along. A lot of people tell me that they find themselves with nothing to do and no feeling of self-worth. I love the idea of elders passing along skills that they have learned to
right.
younger people. Another idea I had, which sort of follows on with the idea for local, there's been several people, I think, working on oral histories, but what I'd like to see a program called Tell Me a Story, where first graders learning to read can practice their reading with elders mm-hmm. who can then tell them a story of what things were like when they were 5 and 6 and
oh,
7 years
yeah.
old, and share that sort of history and community in a way that my grandmother told me stories of her childhood and
right.
riding bicycles through the streets of London. And at the age of 97, she told her great-grandson how to repair a puncture on his bicycle tire because she had done it in the early 1900s, and she remembered.
Right.
Was telling us about it. Not everybody has that, and I'd love to see that come back again into full circle, back into our communities.
Yeah, you're exactly right. We are living in a different world, a different society. You know, my grandmother, you talk about kind of the extended family and the family unit. My grandmother lived with us up until she passed, and I'm definitely a better person because of it. You know, like my childhood was that much richer because of it. And I think it's really just sad and a little bit tragic that our elders in our society today have kind of become like the forgotten people, you know?
Well, I think you can see that. I think you can see that changing. And for instance, a lot of people who are terrified at the idea of, quote unquote, going to the home now find that there are options that are really quite palatable and different in a way that community living never was before.
Right.
You know, there's that sort of
And you've got senior living communities now.
Yes.
Where, you know, if you want to downsize, you can move into a townhouse in a community with other seniors, you
right.
know, so that, you know, so if you don't want to have to deal with some of the other things from having neighbors that are younger, like, you don't have to do that. You can live in a community of seniors, and they're very active communities.
Oh, my goodness, yes. And in fact, we were talking about this earlier, but computer skills are among the most popular activities among
right.
elder communities now. You had asked, Michelle, earlier about what we can actually do
right.
to reintegrate elders into our communities. One of the things that I'm doing with a new friend, actually, I've met in Dutchess County, is we're putting together a group of people whose main interest is elders and working with elders. And we're going to share resources and ideas. So I'm excited about that. So that'll be from a slightly different perspective. And that, actually, I'm beginning that with a luncheon at my house. It'll be a sort of potluck thing where we can gather people who are interested in improving situations for elders, can come and share advice and suggestions and network a little. So I'm excited about that possibility as well. I see that as a way of building a stronger network and support system should people need it.
Right. And that's the thing, is we all need a network and a support system. It doesn't matter if you're an elder or, you know, a young person. It's important to know that there are people that you can count on if you need something, whatever that something is.
Absolutely. And it's funny that you should mention that. On the way over this morning, I was thinking when I started my business, I really had a very clear idea of the people to whom I was going to market, whose services you know, might be interesting to me. But the reality is that I had no idea who my real customers were, and they are either the elder themselves. They could have a very strong support system, but for whatever reasons, and we know families are tricky things, they don't all talk to each other, which
right.
is increasing and very common. Or they've had such emotional difficulties their whole lives that now the time comes to talk about difficult and sticky
and
situations. They can't do it with each other, and I'm brought in almost as a mediator.
Right.
It's often the oldest daughter who calls me in utter frustration because and she doesn't understand how a couple of people have said, gosh, you worked a miracle. And I said, well, no, I'm just coming in from the outside. I don't have, you know, many years of issues and history with this person. It's very easy
right.
for me to say, listen, here's where you are. This is where you could be. This is how we're going to help you get
right,
to it.
Right. I've found the same thing, that people have been more than willing to say things to me that they just won't or can't say to their families for all of those reasons. And nice to be able to help, but you also wish that families could get to the point where they could do that themselves, right? Where they could
yes.
have those hard conversations.
Yes.
Because we all have to have them eventually, right? we do. But no, so I, like I said, I think it's great.
Well, it's certainly been a very interesting few years since I've been doing this, and I'm enjoying it enormously. So it's a different way of being, and the first time in many years I'm actually working for myself too, which I love.
Right,
that's a lot of fun. I have a great boss. If I say to her, you know, it's a lovely day, I'd rather be in the garden this afternoon.
Yeah.
She thinks about it for a split second, and invariably she'll say, go for it, Amanda.
Go ahead. Go in the
ahead,
garden today.
Enjoy it. Enjoy it.
That's really wonderful. So,
well, thank you.
Yeah, I think it's great, the work that you're doing. So do you have any last thoughts for us? Conversations that maybe we should be having with the elder people in our communities, the elder people that are in our midst, those folks that we encounter on a daily basis?
I find an opening question that invariably will lead you to another question is, what are you having the most difficulty with these days?
Right.
And they might say, oh, nothing, everything's fine. You say, well, that's great, but they might say, oh my goodness, I'm glad you asked, because, and the floodgates opened, and sometimes people are just waiting for the opportunity to be asked.
Right, so we should...
Instead of how can I help you?
Right.
What are you having the most difficulty with?
So we should probably also say, if you're going to ask that question, you should also be ready for the answer. Right. So like, don't ask the question if you don't A, want to hear the answer, or B, have time, right, to sit and really listen.
And listen.
Right.
Yeah. That's a very good point, Michelle.
So mindfulness. Wow, that's great. What are you having the most difficulty with right now?
Yeah.
Right.
And then I ask people, you know, we get into it. Well, what do you think some of the difficulties might come up in 5 years or 10 years? You know?
Right.
Where's the best possible place you could be? Where, if you could design your perfect spot in life, where would you like to be? What would you like to be doing right now?
That's a good one. Yeah, they're all good. That's great.
Thank you.
Well, Amanda Henry, CEO of Elder Living Strategies. Amanda, thank you so much for being here with us in the studio, for being here with me in the studio this morning.
Well, it's been a pleasure, Michelle. Thank you so much for inviting me. I've enjoyed it enormously.
So thank you. And you all have not heard the last from her, because I am planning to bring her back in the coming weeks. So thank you, Amanda. And coming up next for you, I've got some Toby Mac with Made to Love, followed by Tracy Chapman and Love's Proof. You're listening to 90.7 WGXC ACRA, The Morning Show with Michelle.